very warm welcome to another episode, a great episode, a bonus episode of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. We're looking ahead to day one of the Epsom Derby Festival, that being, of course, the Oaks and Coronation Cup Day. And I am joined on this occasion by Rory De Largy, by Matthew Chapman, and the return of a certain Ruby Wall. So we're fully stocked today. Now, before I bring in the lads to look ahead to the Oaks and the Coronation Cup and the undercard, if you want to divulge yourself into all things Epsom, well, check out the show notes on this very episode, and there'll be a link available to a fantastic rewind with Joseph O'Brien and Ruby Walsh sitting down, perusing Joseph's brilliant wins on the track at Epsom. At least I think that is the case. I haven't seen it, Ruby. You never rode at Epsom, I'm going to assume. You didn't ride the Jump Jockey v Flat Jockey race?
No, actually. It's not really a funny story. I was on a plane in Dublin Airport on my way to Epsom to ride in the Jump Jockeys, Flat Jockeys Challenge the day of the London tube bombings. So Epsom was cancelled as there was no ambulances available for Epsom racecourse. So I was going to Epsom. So I didn't even take off to leave Dublin Airport that day. But you say the return, my return. I haven't been anywhere. I have actually been working for Paddy Power all this time. I was in the Stella Cinema in Dublin with Joseph O'Brien recording rewind shows, which will go out throughout the summer. We did the Derby, obviously, Australian Camelot. And there are loads more, Royal Ascot, Champions Weekend, Irish English Ledgers, everything.
So enjoy it?
Yeah, it was a good day, yeah. It was a good day, yeah. Plenty of shows there. And a host of other work for content, PK.
Ruby, no,
just
because
you're
boss.
Not in the office doesn't mean we're not working.
Ruby, as you well know, I don't care. I don't care. As far as our listeners are concerned, they are just wondering where the hell is
you just, you make the jibes like you're off on holidays doing nothing.
You do look like you were on holidays. I must say, you've got a tan. So was there a tanning booth in that cinema? Now, tell
that's,
me, did you...
That's what happens when you mow your own grass, PK. You get a colour.
My girl Daisy, she's out there right now and she's doing a great job. Yeah. Listen, Matt Chapman, speaking of tans, how are you? Are we going to see you at Epsom on Friday and Saturday?
Very briefly. I haven't got really much of a role. I'm reading out some of the results basically. So I'm not doing an awful lot, but I will. You might not see me, but I will be there and I'm looking forward to it. But firstly, can we not have this total lack of respect for tanning booths, please? they are worthy of a lot more than you are giving them, Patrick. And you know what? Just the fact that me and Ruby over the last couple of weeks have been sharing a tanning booth from time to time, you know, shouldn't be mocked because we like to come together and talk about the classics in a confined, hot, sticky place.
Good grief, I don't know where this is going. Rory, this is your first pod with both Ruby and Matt, and that's a very good way of kind of introducing yourself to it, I guess.
Yes, well, I've been eased in with just Ruby and just Matt.
Oh, no.
But I gather Ruby and Matt is a different kettle of fish altogether, so yeah, we shall see.
You just sit back and let the, I was going to say magic happen, but I don't think it is.
Basically, Rory, it's very simple. I make the odd mistake, because obviously I am human, vaguely. I make the odd mistake and then Ruby makes me look really stupid as best as he can. And that's kind of how it works.
You've done well with your background, though. I like your background.
Yes.
I'm just slightly disappointed you haven't got the fourth horse in there, which is my first ever Derby bet. A horse called Abtalak.
Oh, yes.
And he made the run. He was a pacemaker for the Sheikh Hamdan first string, and he finished fourth at, I think, 200, 250 to 1. I had 50p each way on. No payout then, no extra places in the Derby despite the big fields.
I'd have said it was a poor choice of background with the week that's in it. I mean, like, Leicester won nine derbies.
Okay.
Hold on.
Because he does have Leicester top of the shot in the middle as well.
Because Leicester, funnily enough, it's the first kind of sign, I think, that people of the sort of who got into racing in the 80s really know how important Lester Piggott was, because although he had absolutely no real chance on Alphabetum, Graham Goode's commentary picks out at the top of the hill, Lester, instead of, you know, just saying Alphabetum in ninth, he goes, Lester's in ninth on Alphabetum. And it kind of shows you how important it was for everyone that Lester Piggott was on a horse, even though it wasn't doing anything. Everyone watching that race, even though the great El Gran Señor was in there, wants to know where Leicester is in a race. And I think maybe in the Derby on Saturday, we'll get Frankie's in 4-4-5th because Frankie kind of has the same aura around him, but not many jockeys do.
No, That is fair. To give context to those listening who can't see what the background is, I think you kind of gave away. It is El Gran Señor and Secreto, yeah? That's the head-to-head, yeah. The head bobber.
The greatest derby for me. Like it just had everything. I'm not saying from the greatest horses or whatever, although I suspect El Gran Señor was one of the greatest horses we've ever seen. But just the more you watch it, you just can't believe El Gran Señor gets beat. Secreto, Christy Roach, you can't believe a jockey could ride a horse as hard as that. And it's just, it's got everything. The race has just got absolutely everything. I remember I went to interview Pat about this defeat on El Gran Señor, and he was fascinating. You'll find that on YouTube somewhere. It was fascinating talking to him about the race. But anyway, we're not here to talk about the 1984 Derby, maybe the 2022 Derby.
We will in tomorrow's podcast, but today we're going to talk about the F-Smokes and the Coronation Cup. But before I do, I'm going to Ruby your favourite Derby then, because Matt has opened up. Go on, favourite Derby on the hop.
You have caught me, yeah. Galileo was wonderful. High Chaparral and Hawkwing, I thought that was a great race. Cool. See the Stars, Pat's Mullen, Harris End, that's probably my favourite.
Yeah, fair enough. Rory, favourite one quickly?
I'd agree with Matt. I was off school, and I watched, that was the first Derby I watched on TV, you know, because I was meant to be at school on a Wednesday afternoon, generally speaking. I managed to watch that because I was off sick. And it was an absolutely spellbinding race to watch, even though the result was not what I wanted. I was an enormous fan of El Gran Señor. I think he's one of the most underrated horses of all time, because that was, you know, if he just won that Derby, he'd be legendary. And he won the best guineas I've ever seen. So it was a great race to watch. And only would have been made better if Atalak had fallen into third place at a big price. But, you know, you can't have it all.
I don't know whether it's our sort of age group or whatever, but those derbies in the 80s, I mean, you could pick out so many. I mean, the Dancing Brave Sharastani obviously is very similar in some ways to El Gran Señor and Secreto for different reasons. And like, you know, we can't really not mention Shergar. But even Slip Anchor at that, you know, when you watch Slip Anchor back, he was just seen as sort of a slow mudlark in some ways. But he went very close to winning the Champion Stakes up at Newmarket when he was beaten by Pebbles. And he did run as a four-year-old, although he got retired very quickly as a four-year-old. But, you know, Slip Anchor, when you watch his Derby, he was one of the most impressive Derby winners you ever see. So you can pick out loads, but I don't know why. But I think that era was a hell of a lot better than the last 10 years, put it like that.
PK, I hope you're feeling like me. I'm feeling really young in this conversation.
It's great.
Reminiscing about derbies that I didn't see live, that I had to watch on YouTube. It doesn't happen me much these days, but you know, I do feel young in this conversation. It's great.
Well, you don't look it, do you? That's one thing.
It's a podcast, Jesus. Matt. No one can see me.
Six months' time, you'll be going on about sea pigeon again.
Was it a derby in the 80s? Right, okay. Let's look ahead to Friday's card at Epsom, lads. Really nice memories there. Really appreciate that. We're going to kick off with the Woodcote Stakes, which always gets things, or at least recently gets things underway on the Friday, 2 o'clock. It is the two-year-old race on the card. 3-1 Commander Straker, 5-1 Legend of Xanadu. The big each-way move is for Silencer for Richard Hannon, who's got a string in great form at the moment. Fives from 16-1, 11-2 Keep Bidding, 6-1 Blatant and Estate, and 9-1 Bar. Okay, this is a big money back race for our online players on paddypower.com, money back second, third, fourth. If you pop into a shop, you'll get four places. Decision is yours. On your return from your dossing, Ruby Walsh, give us the winner of the 2 o'clock.
I actually like Legend of Xanadu, William Buick's mount for Mick Shannon. I was impressed with how he went to the line on his last start. Really kept going well at Redcar. Thought there was an ease in the ground on that occasion. I just liked the performance, and he'd be for me. I'd be fair with him.
Lovely. Legend of Xanadu. Mr. Chapman.
I'm opening myself to all kind of abuse from the team here, but I'm going to have a little bit each way on Self-Praise. Say nothing, Patrick, say nothing. You know you want to, but just hold back. Less is more. Basically, it's a bigger price than Blatant. Finished in front of Blatant at Chester and ducked out at the start that day. I couldn't really understand why Blatant was a shorter price than Self-Praise. And this was a horse that was a real eye-catcher first time out at Doncaster. As I say, I don't think he quite ran to his best at Chester, where he ducked out at the start. And I thought he had an each-way chance. Rory and I have discussed two-year-old races already on the pod when we were talking about Beverly the other day. I'm a great believer in not having massively strong opinions on juveniles until way after Royal Ascot, really, because they are open to so much improvement. But I'm going to go for a little bit each way on self-praise.
Link to Rory is all I'll say.
Yeah, I also, I'm not sure how much dig there's going to be in the ground when we actually start racing on Friday. I looked at this card in the first place on the basis that it was soft, good or soft in places, but and there was potentially a little bit of rain around. But the more I think about it, the more I think it's going to dry out to good, and therefore it shouldn't really be an issue for most. It might be tricky to get away with a very high draw here with a big field for this race. So that's not necessarily ideal for Commander Straker, although he will go forward from his draw. That might make him work a little bit hard. Estate's a horse I quite like as well, who was behind Self-Praise at Chester on his debut and then improved to chase home Commander Straker at Bath last time out. I thought Estate would step forward again, but he's drawn an 11-2, which is you know, a tricky enough draw there. And I end up coming down with Matt on Self-Praise. I was taken by the run at Doncaster, where he started slowly and then ran into a bit of trouble. And then at Chester, he was drawn badly. And with daylight on his outside, he has ducked out to his right, which is a thing that horses do, inexperienced horses do all the time. I wouldn't hold that against him. The fact that he's had a couple of runs is a big positive. It's a difficult race for a horse with limited experience, and you've got plenty of winners in the past who've had three or four runs. So that's any horse who's had that experience is a positive. I thought Self-Praise was learning in his first two starts. I think he'd be more professional here. He's got a good draw in stall six. He doesn't want to be slowly away this time, but I think he'll be fine. I think essentially he's been learning on his first two starts. Maybe he is just an habitual slow starter or an awkward starter, and that would put him on the back foot. But I, again, getting back to making judgments about two-year-olds, you can't really judge them on one or two runs. He seems to have come forward nicely for me, and he's a double-figure price in places, certainly. So, you know, from an each-way perspective, he appeals most to me. But it's a tough race, and yeah. I wouldn't want to waste too much of my bank on it.
Fair enough. Couple of votes for Self-Praise, one for Legend of Xanadu and the Woodcut. Let's move on to the 235. This is a mile handicap, the World Pool Handicap. And we will have extra places on this particular race. And I look at the name of the favour here and I have to go straight back to you, Matt Chapman. Totally Charming is the 11-2 favourite. You surely can't be tipping this up and Self-Praise.
No, obviously that would be ridiculous. Although I do have Charm. it just doesn't materialise very often, but on the occasions it does, it's lovely. Fantastic Fox for me. I thought this was a very tough race. It wasn't a race that I spent hours and hours drooling over because I got twisted around in circles so many times. Didn't run a great race on comeback at Haydock, but I've noted Dragon Symbol would be an obvious example. I think the Roger Varian horses are coming on for a run. Do you remember at Newmarket? At the early part of the season, they were banging in left, right and centre, and then they went a bit quiet. I think they're just needing a run or two. So Fantastic Fox, got Atzini up. He's been dropped a couple of pounds this term. He's a lightly raced animal who should be able to do a little bit better. And on back form, he has got a chance anyway. So Fantastic Fox.
Okay, right. Totally Charming, ignored. Fantastic Fox for Matt. Right, go straight back to you, Rory, because Oh This Is Us pops up here, a horse who you were quite keen on in Chester. And of course, where did he finish?
Well, I thought, was there four places on offer, I believe, in the Chester race?
So he
backed him each way and got four places. Possibly not with Paddy Power, though. I'm not entirely sure. And I thought, I didn't think he got a great ride from Andrea Zaney that day. They went really slowly early on. The obvious horses went forward from the start. The horses drawn one and three, who were first and second in the market. And the rest of the field seemed happy to give them a lead. In fairness, Oh This Is Us wasn't right at the back of the field, but he's just given them a little bit too much daylight. He was only beaten 2.5 lengths in the end, going on at the finish without being given a hard time. I thought he was maybe a little bit lucky to get fourth place because Mr. Adzeni wasn't throwing the kitchen sink at him in the last 50 yards, although I was telling him to. but I think reunited with Sean Levy, who has, you know, knows him over the years, I think he will go well. Again, he's a course and distance winner. He won a Group 3 on this card last year on good to soft grounds. And here he is back in a handicap off 92. He's got a tremendous record, turned out within about a week of a previous run as well. So the quick turnaround isn't an issue. In fact, it's a positive for me. If the ground stays just on the soft side of good, that would also be a positive. I think he just wants to get his toe in these days. And so good ground suits him better than good to firm. He won, as I said, he won a good to soft last year. He's too well handicapped to ignore. He is drawn out in stall 14, but that just, you know, he should be able to go forward and get a reasonably good position here. Normally, you'd be concerned about a very wide draw, but actually, you know, you look at the results of races like this over the years, and track position is much more important than simply where you're drawn. So it doesn't bother me too much. And as I said last time, he's just too well handicapped to ignore. He's shown signs this year that he's close to a revival. And given that he bounced back on this card last year to win at a big price, I'm more than happy to stick with him.
Okay, 12s into 8 to 1 at the time of recording. Oh, this is us, Ruby.
Yeah, I'm with Rory. Same thing. I'm basically going on his course form last year. He was rated 108 on that occasion. He's down to 92 tomorrow afternoon. To me, he just looks too well handicapped, and I would agree with Rory on the Chester ride. It looked like Andrea was trying to get in and trying to get in. He got himself too far back and didn't get going until he was well straightened up and didn't knock him about. So, and I thought he was really running the last 50 yards. So I was with Oh, This Is Us as well.
Okay, two votes for Oh, This Is Us, whilst Mr. Chapman is a fantastic, cunning Mr. Fox indeed. Right, the 10 past three at Epsom is the first of three group ones this weekend. It's the Coronation Cup. And Piledriver, of course, we know has got the form round here, is the 7-4 favourite at the time of recording. Manobo is the representative for Charlie Appleby, maybe not the expected representative at 9-4. Disappointed in the Dubai Gold Cup when last seen. High Definition. Well, he's a puzzle, isn't he? Intrigued to get the views of the lads on his run in the Tattersalls Gold Cup, 9-2. 9-2 for Hookham. Living Legend is 10s. And Pallavicino, the outsider, 80-1. I'm going to go to you, Rory. Piledriver, the deserving favourite, at least I think so. How do we treat that run, High Definition's run? A great ride by Ryan Moore, or that is how good he is?
Probably more the ride than the performance. From him, given we've seen an awful lot of High Definition. I think that's probably the kind of ride he needs, though. I mean, what we said about him pretty much from day one is, although he's clearly very genuine, he doesn't have an instant gear change. And that's found him out on numerous occasions. And actually riding him aggressively over a mile and a quarter, probably the best thing for him. But his best form is definitely over a mile and a quarter to me. And whether they want to ride him quite as aggressively here over a mile and a half, I don't know. You know, for all people talk about Epsom being a sharp mile and a half, it isn't at the end of the day, because, you know, you have that big climb before at the descent of Tattenham Corner in the first place. And although they finish quickly in relative terms, you still don't get non-stayers winning the Derby, and you don't get non-stayers winning the Coronation Cup either. So although you can argue he does stay a mile and a half, there's no doubt that when he was stepped up in Trip last season, he didn't impress. Again, you look at his two-year-old form and say he kind of looks like a stayer because he's a grinder. But essentially, I think he's a mile and a quarter grinder. And the layout of the Curragh is probably ideal for him. And that's where his wins came, obviously, as a two-year-old as well. He just wants to, you know, keep grinding it out, but that doesn't necessarily make him a stayer. And at Epsom, you need to have natural speed. And I think that counts against him here. Manobo, similarly, he is a stayer. He's an out-and-out stayer from what we saw of him last season. He improved a lot on soft ground at the back end. He won a list at the race of Saint-Cloud and then won the pre-Chardonnay at the ARC meeting and looked like the type of horse he would develop into a Gold Cup horse in time. That's probably next year, in fairness, because, you know, you need a little bit of time to develop between your three-year-old season and turning into a Gold Cup horse. And he deserves his place here in terms of his progress, but he's not a mile and a half horse to me. And he's the rain early in the week and the rain that was forecast for the weekend would have been very much in his favour because he handles soft ground very well. But I think we're going to see good ground and no worse than good ground on Friday, given how the weather's shaping up at the moment. And again, that's going to count against him. So it really all comes down to Piledriver again. You know, they've had to sort of travel the world to find opportunities for him. And that's always a little bit of a worry coming back to domestic competition. You'd rather, if I'm punting horses domestically, I'd rather they were campaigned domestically as well, because you know where you stand with them a little bit. But he won the race last year in soft ground. He doesn't need it soft. He's shown his form on good ground as well. I don't think he wants it rattling fast, but it'll just be, as I said, good ground to start the day. So everything's pretty much in his favour. There are question marks over the next two in the betting. And I think while it's, again, it doesn't appeal as a tremendous betting heat with a, you know, a smallish field and the potential for it to turn tactical, it wasn't a problem for him last year. And Frankie Dettori, again, as Martin Dwyer did last year, won't be afraid to press on and make the race his own if it's not shaping up the way he wants. I thought Martin was very good last year when he basically ran the finish out of the favourite. And Frankie will be happy to do the same sort of thing against horses without a turn of foot here. So Pile Driver is very hard to oppose.
It could be a massive weekend for Frankie Dettori, given he's got obviously Emily Upjohn in the Oaks and Pismo the Deal for Dunnigan in the Derby. Ruby, your thoughts on the Carnation Cup?
Funny, I do accept actually what Rory is saying about high definitions form at a mile and a quarter, but I still think he wants further, and I'm with him. I know Ryan gave him a fantastic ride at the Curragh in the Tattersalls Gold Cup. I think that was a strong race. I think it was a really strong race, and I'm with High Definition here. I was with Pile Driver last year, but that was with the benefit of the run at Newmarket a month before he ran the Coronation. He's been to Dubai. I don't know what his preparation has been since he came back. Did he have a small break? And then he's coming here. But I was kind of hoping Ryan Moore would ride High Definition pretty similar tomorrow as to how he rode him at the Curragh. And I'm siding with him. I think he could just be fitter than Pile Driver tomorrow afternoon.
One for Pile Driver, one for High Definition. Matt, you're probably going to throw him an elbow, are you?
No. I'm going to be agreeing with one of our expert guests. Just on High Definition, I think it's quite amusing that you could get a horse in a Coronation Cup that, in my opinion at least, no one knows what trip he wants, no one knows how he should be ridden, and yet he's in a Coronation Cup. It's pretty rare to get a Group 1 horse like High Definition that basically none of us know really what he wants. I have no idea what he wants. All I know is that he looked like an old giraffe as a three-year-old, but he might be like one of those four-year-old juvenile hurdles that wins the Triumph and then disappears for a season and then comes back as a six-year-old and seven-year-old and gets back together again. He might be that kind of horse, but I've never liked High Definition as an animal. I don't think he's done many people any favours in his career other than just confuse us. And he still confused me, although I am easily confused, it is fair to say. I think we could have almost a mirror image to last year, except instead of Al Arzi, it might be Huckam who comes there cruising, because he's that type of Al Arzi horse. But I'll keep it simple. I was very lucky to be at the Dubai World Cup. And Manobo looked like an absolute nutter that night. He just looked like a horrible, horrible horse. Maybe it was a one-off. But he was being trained for the Ascot Gold Cup then. It seems weird now that he's now a Coronation Cup horse. And I thought Frankie Dettori was awful on Pile Driver. Totally and utterly uninspired. If you look back at that race, he finished fourth. I think you could argue that Pile Driver should have won that much. I thought Dettori was poor on him. He needs to do a lot better in this race. But if he does, I think Pile Driver is a solid horse. And the other thing is, because of his connections, not the Dettori part, but the trainer, he's always a bigger price than his form probably deserves. If he was trained by Gosden or Appleby or O'Brien, he would be a shorter price. And he's always a point bigger for me than he should be on his form. Pile Driver, simple.
Two votes for Pile Driver. Matt Chapman won't be making any friends at Coolmore or Frankie or Cry. You put the dig in there for a few of them, Matt. Fourth right views, as always.
I'm relatively confident that John Magnier and Frankie Dettori won't be listening to the pod, so I think I got away with it.
I know for certain that they do. I know for certain. I tweet John and Thady Gosden. Yeah,
Bearing in mind what's happened in court over the last 24 hours, Patrick, when you say, I know for certain...
Which court cases are we talking about now?
You just have to be confident that when I challenge you in court, you do know that for certain.
Oh, Chapman v. Kennelly. That would you step aside, Depp and Heard. That would make.
I'm asking for 100 million.
Good luck. Right, we're going to move on to the 3:45. I'll take the back of the couch. This is going to be a brilliant extra place race. It's going to go five places instead of three on the Paddy Power website, assuming we get the requisite amount of runners. Moctasab is the 100-30 favourite for this. It's a handicap over a mile and a quarter, the Kazoo handicap. You've got Soto Sizzler, Ryan Moore, booked for David Minussier, 11-2. It's 7-1 Cap Francais, William Buick, booked for Ian Williams. Royal Champion is 8-1, 9-1 Love is Golden, it sure is. 10-1 Caradoc, 11-1 Good Birthday, and a load of other horses, 11-1. Okay, Ruby, straight back to you for the Kazoo handicap.
Cap Francais for me. William Buick takes over from Ben Curtis. I thought he got a long way back at Chester, had to come wide into the straight. The winner got a great run down the inside and he was flying at the line. Cap Francais for me.
Simple as that. Back to you, Mr. Chapman.
Love is golden. Got 8 stone 6, lovely racing weight. It's nice to see a handicap with a little bit of variation in weights. Good draw, goes with a bit of dig in the ground. And while there are horses that can beat Love is Golden on form, they've been edging up the handicap for winning. Love is Golden is kind of just being consistent. And I think this might be the chance that, and we've seen it in these kind of handicaps at Epsom before, where a Johnston runner just gets away from them. And I think off 8 stone 6, Love is Golden has at least got a very good each way chance.
Yes, but back from 12s down to 9s as we speak. Right, Rory?
I'm inclined to be with Ruby with Cap Francais. The concern with him is he's dead right. He got too far behind at Chester and then finished off really well. The worry is in a race like this at Epsom, if you get far behind, it's not so easy making up ground coming down the hill. But on the plus side with him, he was second in the Blue Ribbon trial here as a three-year-old. The only time he's run it at Epsom before, behind Cape of Good Hope. That run shows that he handles the track very well. I think if you back him, you'll have your heart in your mouth for a while, because he will be coming from a fair way off the pace. But there should be a pretty solid pace going on here with the likes of Bad Company and the City's Phantom and Love is Golden, sure to go forward. So it should at least play to a horse that can come from behind. Not an easy tactic to pull off at Epsom, and you need a good jockey to do it, but he's got a good jockey in William Buick, and he'd be just about top of my list. Victory Chime and Soto Sizzler both go really well here, but are both handicapped accordingly. You know, they've gone up a lot in the weights for the form that they've shown over course and distance in the past. Now rated 107 and 105, which doesn't make it easy for either of them, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see one of them make the frame given the previous course form. But Cap Francais, for me, I think he'd be an each way bet, because the worry with a horse like him is that something will have flown a couple of furlongs from home and he'd be rattling past the beaten horses and not quite able to get there. So I'll be backing him each way to get the best out of him value wise.
Lovely. Two votes for Cap Francais whilst Matt is with Love is Golden. Okay, the Oaks. It's the big race on day one of the Epsom Derby Festival. It's due off at 4:30 on Friday. At the time of recording, Emily Upjohn, the unbeaten filly for John and Thady Gosden and Frankie, is the 5-4 favourite. 7-2 Nashua, also for John and Thady Gosden. Holly Doyle, what a huge day it could be for her. Tuesday, the horse is an 8-1 shot. Ryan Moore's pick, or Ryan Moore was told to ride the horse. I'm not sure how the arrangement goes. 9-1 Concert Hall for Aidan O'Brien also. With the Moonlight is the Appleby Buick combo. That's 11-1. Tranquil Lady for Joseph O'Brien. Tom Markhand, and eye-catching booking. And then you've got some of the other trial winners. Thoughts of June, Rogue Millennium. They're at 16 and 25-1. Ruby Walsh, the Oaks. We've got a hot pot favourite here in Emily Upjohn. We've got Aidan O'Brien sending his usual battalion. What wins?
Good question. Emily Upjohn was obviously very impressive on her last start. I thought Nashua did it well at Newbury for Holly Doyle Tuesday. She's been placed in both guineas. Concert Hall was the finisher in the Irish guineas. She had won over a mile and a quarter prior to that. I tipped her each way and actually backed her each way in the Irish guineas coming down in trip. I know she finished strongly and everyone's saying Oaks, 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 but I thought she'd want to finish as strongly over a mile and a quarter at Navan myself, which put me against her. With the Moonlight, was very impressive at Newmarket, but the form hasn't really worked out. And it left me with Thoughts of June. I know she beat Above the Curve at Chester. Above the Curve has since gone to Longchamp and won at Group 1. I know that form was turned around from Leopardstown, where Above the Curve was much too good for Thoughts of June. But I actually think Thoughts of June improved. And I know people will think Ryan Moore got first run. He dictated at the front end and Above the Curve was coming at him to catch him at the line. But when they went through the winning post and on around the bend at Chester, Above the Curve never went by Thoughts of June. I think she's a strong stare. Again, a little bit of ease in the ground was probably where I was going, but I think she's a strong stare and she's overpriced and I was going with her each way.
Lovely. Okay. There's a very nice price of time recording. Matt Chapman, back to you for the Oaks.
Well, look, if Emily Upjohn wins, no one's going to be surprised, are they? 5-4. She was hugely impressive in the Musidora. There's every chance to believe that she will be just as good as a mile and a half. And she looked brilliant at Sandown. So she can easily win. But I've always, I mean, my mind has never changed in this race from the start of the season, basically. When I saw Tuesday win, I just always thought Tuesday will win the Oaks and I will stick with her. I think she's a massive price. She's placed in two classics. And you can look at those two ways. You can either say, oh, it's a bit disappointing, just placed in two classics. I'm kind of thinking she's massively overachieved to get into the place in two classics. My main theory for that is that I talked to Aidan O'Brien before she ran in the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket. And he basically, I said, like, what do you think, Aidan? And this was completely just me chatting to him. And he does chat, Aidan. These aren't secret conversations. If you go up to Aidan, he will talk to you. And he just said to me, he said, like, she's the female Luxembourg. And if she's the female Luxembourg, she was always gagging for a mile and a half. So I think she's probably done really well to be placed in two classics over a trip that's far too short for her. And I think her classic class makes her a massive price at around 8 or 9 to 1. So I'll be backing Tuesday each way.
Lovely. Okay, well, two very nice prices so far. Rory, your thoughts?
I considered Tuesday for this. I was slightly put off by the fact that she's drawn on stall one, which hasn't been such a curse in the Oaks, tending to get smaller fields and a bigger differential between the best and the worst horses. But over a mile and a half at Epsom, stall one is the trickiest draw to overcome because the fields sweep right briefly before they come back down towards Tatton Corner again. So you're traveling further on that outside, and it's hard to get a track position from stall one, comparatively speaking. As I said, it would be a massive negative in the Derby for me, back in horses drawn one and two, less so in the Oaks. And I'd definitely give Tuesday a chance. And, you know, looking back, we've only had two favourites win this since Sariska, and both of those were guineas winners. So it gives you an idea of you know, what a graveyard it's been, really, for favourite backers. But Tuesday is the one horse who's closest to that ideal. Having run very well in a couple of guineas, and looking like she will stay this trip. She's certainly got the pedigree for it. So I'd shortlist her. And I would also shortlist Thoughts of June, because the horse I like in the race at a big price, and I think you might get an even bigger price than she is at the moment, she's 33s, is the filly who was fourth to Thoughts of June at Chester. I went back, I rewatched that race a few times, and I thought Moon de Vega went under the radar there. She was beaten 6.5 lengths into fourth. But if you watch the race again, she bounces out from stall one to take a handy position on the rails. But because she was in stall one, that's where she had to be, on the rail. Normally a good place to be at Chester. But off the home turn, as Ryan's kicked on, the two who were making the early pace both stopped fairly quickly, and they dropped right back into Moon de Vega's lap, and she couldn't avoid them. She basically spent half a furlong dropping back with them before she could be pulled out to come with her run. So she's lost. I mean, she's lost more than she was beaten by. Not that I think she would have been the winner of that race, because the one thing you can do when you're being stopped in your run by something else, you do get an opportunity of filling your lungs at least, so that you have more run left in you when you do eventually get out. So horses making late progress can sometimes flatter a little bit. But I thought she had no chance of showing what she could do. She's got a good pedigree for this, being by Lope de Vega out of an Asamoah mare. Plenty of black type fillies in the family. And, you know, this race has been dominated by Aidan O'Brien and John Gosden over the last decade or so. But the one trainer who's managed to break that stranglehold is Rafe Beckett. And he very much knows an Oaks filly when he has one. So it's interesting that she is the Oaks filly in the Beckett yard. Rafe Beckett, the last time I was working with Ruby, we were discussing his poor form. Well, he's in terrific form now. Ruby was spot on, by the way. The Beckett horses run terribly that weekend. But they've bounced back into very good form at the moment. She's drawn a stall 11. And again, you know, people will normally look at that and think, oh, you know, high draw, left-handed track, that's got to be a negative. But actually, it's probably a positive. It helps her get track position without horses, you know, coming on top of her. So I think she'll get a good position early on. She won't be trapped on a rail as she was at Chester. So she'll get clear sailing down the hill. I don't know how good she could be. I mean, you know, what she showed at Chester, adding on, you know, the ground that she lost, might be exactly how good she is. And she might struggle to turn the tables around with Thoughts of June. But she could also be a fair bit better. And we've seen constantly in the Oaks, and indeed in the Derby, that we don't know how good these horses are until this race actually takes place. A lot of horses are taking big, big steps forward. Backing the horse with the best form has not been the best way to go in either the Oaks or the Derby in recent seasons. just because where it comes in the season and the fact that the horses are campaigned to peak later in the year as well, we're still finding out about them. So I thought there was a fair chance that she was a lot better than she's shown so far. And at 33s and bigger, I was happy to take a chance back in Reachway.
So that's three big prices. Thoughts of June for Ruby, and then you have Moon de Vega for Rory at 16 and 33 to 1 respectively. And Tuesday for Matt, which is also an each way price at 8 to 1. You ruined my next question, Rory. I was going to ask the lads. I was going to say, well, lads, last trainer not named O'Brien or Gosden to win the Oaks. You have to go back. Thank you very much. Well done. Well done, Ruby. You have to go back to 2013. Talent was the name of the horse. Yep. I should have asked, actually. Matt Beckett. But anyway, right, that's three.
He also had the favourite that year, Ralph Beckett. Talent won at 20 to 1, and he had the filly who won the Lingfield Oaks trial, who I think started favourite for the race.
Wasn't like Luck Here or something like that, was it?
It was Secret Gesture, who was second.
Oh, yeah.
The first and second.
That's not too bad. Yeah,
Beckett's can't really knock that.
He's got a good record too. Yeah, Gosden, Beckett, O'Brien, one of them will win the Oaks. That's brilliant, lads. Thank you very much. That was a really, really in-depth look ahead to the race. By the way, if you're popping into a Paddy Power shop for the Oaks, you'll have a free bet in the Oaks. Simple as that. It's a free bet up to a tenner. Doesn't matter what happens. You'll get your money back as either free bet or cash, depending on your play card. So that's a brilliant offer if you're going to the shops. Gentlemen, we're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to look ahead to the Derby tomorrow, but once again, Ruby Walsh, you sat with Joseph O'Brien and you've already looked back at multiple derbies, including Joseph when winning. And you're going to be, just to remind our listeners, there's going to be lots of you and Joseph. Lots of you and Joseph.
Loads of rewind programs coming your way. Royal Ascot. What else do we do? Champions Weekend. Champions Weekend. That is St. Leger's.
Did you ask him about Enki? Enki? Mahmoud Al-Zarouni? Say that's
St. Leger.
Yeah. I'd say that was a tough conversation.
We talked about Camelot. He didn't talk too much about Enki.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
What's done is done, Patrick. It can't be changed.
I know. All right, well, watch out for those, the show notes. You can either get the links to the episode one where Ruby and Joseph are looking back in those episodes. We'll be back tomorrow, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Enjoy Oaks Day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.